Okay, well, I should start by introducing this talk or discussion with Daniel Coffin, and I'm Phil King, a painter with Aleph Contemporary, and this opportunity has just come up for me to talk to someone who's I very much admire and whose book I just found so sympathetic and so much in my corner, as it were, that I really thought it'd be really great to talk to Daniel, and who was a professor at rhetoric at Berkeley University, and known to my wife, who is an art historian there, Joni. And so there was a kind of knowledge around, and there we connected. I read his book, and called The Reading the Way of Things, Towards a New Technology of Making Sense. And we have a very similar background in our reading, I think, around Deleuze, Guattari, Nietzsche. Kind of for me, it's always been, reading has always been a very important part of what they call now practice, but it's really sitting around in the studio reading books. So it's a book that really fell in my lap because Daniel, you've done some really great YouTube talks. You work for kind of an online college now, is that correct?
Yeah, Renegade University. Yeah, yep. The Nietzsche course up there. Yeah.
Yeah, terrific. And, Nietzsche is a struggle in the sense that there's always the right wing waiting to take possession. And I've always felt that it's a very liberating, very anti-right wing thinking, and the way you approach it is fantastic and very much in line. As I say, it's very much a sympathy. So in preparing for this talk, in discussing, and I did write down some questions or a general thing to focus on, because I read you wrote this great catalogue essay for the artist, and I sort of found it in delving around for the filmmaker and artist Mark Luffier, and I just found it great. I mean, I mean, taking his name out of it, yeah. the nitty gritty of what you're saying really, really spoke to me.
Yeah,
connected.
And as a side, Mark's work, I've known Mark a long time, and I taught a lot of his work. It was this great opportunity, and when I was writing that particular essay, I usually, as you look through my work, I tend to write these sort of quick, like pithy essays. Like I just try to one little move. And Mark told me when I was writing that introduction that I had to consider all of contemporary art and how he fit in. And that's why it's called and it tried to become of the moment, whatever that means, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I think what happens is that other artists can say, well, I fit in there too, and.
That was the idea.
I think it really works. And I think, you have a great, great book on contemporary art in you there. really, to set the scene, because for me, I think I've always, at a certain point, I just went, well, I'm a painter, I'm not really an artist, I'm not really a contemporary artist. Yeah. And, I sort of just, it's not a craft, but there's a way in which sometimes I think there's a thing with painting is that because it's so ubiquitous, people think, oh, a painting is always art, but of course it's not. You go to an amateur art show, is that art? It can easily not be art. So it's very easy just to go, well, I'm just going to paint. It's not going to be art anymore. It's just going to be whatever. And it takes away a lot of pressure, but at the same time, you want to participate.
Yeah.
You want to take part in the discourse. And so hence the reading, I guess, and hence the sort of trying to figure stuff out on this weird, weird, weird world that we live in. And I guess that's what contemporary art is in a way. And I think your approach and gaming is just like, oh yeah, of course I'm a contemporary artist.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
No problem.
People who like you, who operate in one medium, sometimes think of themselves as an artist of that medium.
Yeah.
Right. I stole that phrase from Guattari, which is the post-media. Although I think, a different meaning, right? But yeah, I mean, I feel like to sort of summarize for people, right? Like that, what the argument is that there used to be sort of we frame art with especially pre the network, really, right? Pre the ubiquity of recording and playing back, you know, before the ubiquity of the image, there's sort of an architecture of art production, right? Where you have artist, medium, and the expression, right? And then we view the expression, right? Yeah. And that, so people get hooked into a medium. And so, you know, art schools are always structured around which medium are you operating with, right? So I taught at the San Francisco Art Institute, and they had, you know, you could do painting, you could do 3D. Then they actually had a department called New Genres, right? And almost everyone was moving into there because you weren't tied to a medium, right? You could operate sort of across them. And I think that was trying to articulate, although they don't think they got it yet, right? Because they're still thinking about it as a genre. There's a new genre. It's another medium.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? As opposed to really being post-medium, right? Which is when the camera is always already on, when we're recorded sort of constantly, right? And that's not just social media. Yeah. So it's also social media. It's also the banking system, right? Which is really, you go talk about surveillance capitalism, you can look at it from an ideological perspective, but from an artistic perspective, they're always recording us, right? We're making movies. Right now, we're making a movie. You and me, right?
That's
now.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. DIY. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we're always doing. We're, especially during COVID, it sort of amplified that. All we're ever doing is making movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And the movie is us, right? I look at the screen, there's me, right? And so at some point, screen and self swap places. And so there's really no medium anymore. We become enmeshed. The whole architecture of artist, medium, expression goes away.
I mean, I do think it's something, you know, that I got because my BA was, as you say, you know, painting course.
Right.
And that, you know, and it was taught by painters, and it was very much. But then my MFA or MA as fine art as it was called at the time was a goldsmith's, where you know, it was much more the model that art schools have gone to now, where it was just a course with every, you know, people mixed up, and there were sculptors and, you know, and filmmakers and you know, and at that time again, you know, I like that was when I felt like, yeah, I'm a painter, but I'm a contemporary artist because I've got on this course, you know. So it was never an issue. And that sort of my, I guess when I resigned from being a contemporary artist was sort of giving up my my goldsmiths, you know, I resigned from having that goldsmiths thing. Like, you can't, once you've done it, you you know, it's a great thing, you know. It's like it was a thing, it was a particular moment in time. But there was people there on the BA, you know, like Henry Bond and you know, Liam Gillick, who were doing work that as you say, they were going working as journalists, as art, you know, and they were doing very interesting stuff. Like they'd go out to a news story and just be professional journalists, you know, well, because the artists could do sort of anything. So it was this real freedom. And I guess, and there was also kind of a feeling that you could, that it was all pretend, like playing a role, like exactly what you're saying, like you're in a film and I'm going to play the artist.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you make it. And I, you know, and it's a bit of a con trick. Or like that film with Leonardo DiCaprio, where he takes on professions and stuff.
Right. I want to sort of inflect that and say, well, I think it's post-con, right? Because it's no longer the con, because the con suggests that I'm pulling something over when it's always already been pulled over, right? So it's all sort of the trickster, but we're all tricksters. We're all playing in this realm of the image, right? Right. So Spielberg movie with DiCaprio, right there, he still has to play this role that's not him, right? But what he's beginning to introduce is what is the real him, right? But in the end, that's what that movie tries to bring it back home. He really is this thing. He's this guy who knows all this good stuff. When the truth is, he's always already morphing. He's always these other things. You know what I'm saying? Like the real gets sort of a
yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's that film where We Are No Angels with Robert De Niro and Sean Penn, where they're priests. Yeah, they're criminals and they go and dress as priests. And at the end, the guy is a priest.
Yes.
You know.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's just brilliant. I think you know, it's that sense. It's like you said, there's no distance. There's no, there isn't, you know, you're not playing a role. And it's like this thing where people used to do it a lot more before kind of Facebook cracked down, where you could just sign up as anything, you know, you didn't have to be tied to. And in the early days of discussion groups and things, you know, when I joined this really amazing discussion group in retrospect, you know, in the days when it was just sending emails. And it was a good Deleuze one, you know, and I learned so much, but I was totally another person, you know. I was just this Wendy Chain, I think it was, you know. So, but it was great. There was no, you know, but I yeah. So yes, there is that. And of course, being a painter is that thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Facebook thing is an interesting thing, right? I think, you know, I when you wrote me some questions, you called out like the move from the society of the spectacle to the society of karaoke.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's an important distinction, right? Because you know, I definitely, you know, I read Guy Debord and I'm a situationist and I'm like, oh yeah, it's a spectacle. But the spectacle still suggests that I'm here and it's there and it's beginning to infiltrate me, right?
Yes, so yes, another, yeah.
And so I'm an object that's being sort of occupied by ideology, by capitalism, by brands, by marketing, right? To sort of define my emotional state, define my being. But what social media did is flip it around so that now I'm putting myself in the spectacle constantly. And in fact, the very terms of living today are such that I have to perform. I'm not, the image isn't pervading me. I'm projecting myself, right? So like karaoke, you are the thing doing it. You're performing.
Yeah.
Right?
I could hear voices. I mean, I can hear painters, you know, like an artist, authentic artists, you know, screaming at us at this point.
No question.
You know, we are not social media. You know, this is just, you know, a lie, or, you know, and there is a truth. There is an authenticity in painting, which is something that kind of me and my friends never really, you know, kind of differentiate. There was always a difference. There was always, I used to paint these expressionist paintings when I was on my BA. And I used to think they were really funny, you know, like I was performing, playing, but of course everybody received them. It's just totally expressionistic, you know. But I thought they were grotesque in a comic. The grotesque always interests me because it was always it's like in books and things, it's something that draws you in, like a bad dream, you know, it's surrealism and that stuff, you know, you get sucked in. And yeah, but I never felt, but of course, how could I prove that I wasn't this?
Right, right. But the point, it doesn't matter anymore.
Business, you know.
Well, it's funny thinking about your work, right? Because to me, every stroke of yours, everything, I've looked at a lot of your work and it never feels serious, right? It feels like you're always playing, like it's a playground. Like it's all a playground and you're taking a little bit from here, a little bit from here. Oh, here's a person, here's a tree, here's modernism, here's Picasso, here's, right? You're taking everything. You're taking gestures, the real world, the history of art, all at once and just sort of throwing them on the you feel to me like a super contemporary, right? It's this moment where you're not, unlike Cézanne, right, who's standing before the field or before the pears and wrestling, how can I get those pears, right? He's really,
yeah, but it's the thing, isn't it, about Cézanne, even like once you get this mentality, you know, you realize like Cézanne was painting from photographs when I am painting nature after Poussin,
right?
No, he's actually imagining he's Poussin in front of that landscape. He's playing Poussin.
Yeah, you know? I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not it, and all this, like Picasso's mark making, he's taken off. Like they're all playing with each other's mark making. You know, the Cubists were playing with different. You know, they were doing a Georges Braque. You know, he was doing a little bit of Corot in that bit. You know, the passage, and he's adding it in, or little pointillism comes in. You know, they were very self-conscious. Even their etchings, you know, it's like a cut, you know, or drawings. It's a mark making, which is sort of looked at way before Jasper Johns. And I always resent that it's almost Jasper Johns is this very, very serious, you know, like kind of critical. But the Cubists were doing that, but playfully, you know.
Yeah.
Because they were all reading Nietzsche and stuff, you know, they were all into that kind of thing, you know. And so when you look at, I look for the generic, you know, the generic mark as well. So it becomes, you see Picasso was picking up on the way Van Gogh made a mark, you know.
Right. Yeah. I think it's sort of inevitable, right? I think when I talk about your work, I was talking about the anxiety of influence, right? That that Bloom talks about, Howard Bloom, right? Yeah. That people are always, that he reads the history of literature really as this history of anxiety around the influence, right? So Melville's trying to, anxious about Shakespeare, right? And Pynchon's anxious about Melville, right? That they're always trying to shake it off and define themselves,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Necessarily co-opting that. It always bugged me that he called it anxiety though, right? I always wanted to flip it around to make it not an anxious moment, right? But to make it a playful moment, right? And I love that you use this word play, right? And that's what I see in all these artists, right? That play doesn't mean that you're not serious, right? It's just that serious, right? When it's all play.
Right? Well, Matisse is the one, when you think of how playful his work appears, but it was incredibly anxious as well, you know, and right. they broke through. And I respect that anxiety, you know, because they broke through, you know.
Sure.
To be playful, they lived in a very unplayful, rigid, bourgeois, you know, demand, and they made these incredible joyful, you know, in Matisse's tradition, you know, they really went screw you, you know, and I think Matisse, I just come back to again and again, you know, but I see a lot of because he must have really struggled, you know, it was like. Just because, and he talks very seriously about form. An artist must never smile, never photograph me smiling, you know. Which, and I think, yeah, like I said, I mean, there is a lot of seriousness, you know, and you do feel like, wow, you know, I don't offend anyone.
The play should be kind of liberating. I mean, that's the idea.
Yeah,
Yeah. So it doesn't mean you can't be careful. It doesn't mean it's not painstaking, right? I mean, I think about, you know, an artist I got obsessed with a bunch of years ago. She had this, maybe my favorite, no offense, my favorite work of art ever, I think, was this work, this sculpture by Sarah Z. She had sort of kinetic sculptures, but she had one. This was the 01-01-01 show. So it was 2001. It was long before she sort of really broke out. Like she had
she was at Venice Biennale, wasn't she?
Now she's huge, yeah. But back then, SF MoMA sort of recognized her. And she had this incredible sculpture, which was, it was an SUV that was splayed down the entire atrium, right?
Wow.
And as you kind of walked up it, there was no oil and grease and blood. It was just folded inside and out. And as you walked around, you'd see pieces of it, and there'd be what she normally kind of does, is sort of little styrofoam sculptures and a fan blowing and wind. And she called it Things Fall Apart.
Right.
It was such a great deadpan reading, right? To sort of co-opting that, whatever it is, Yeats, whoever the hell wrote that, you know, The Second Coming. And I kind of love that play, but my point being how meticulous she is, right? It's incredibly painstaking work. It's so micro, she's working incredibly hard, incredibly refined, incredible attention. My point being that play isn't flippant.
No. I mean, my dad used to say, you know, sometimes like, that's just flippant, Phil, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I'd be like, oh, you know, yeah, he's kind of right. And oh dear, I'm a bad person, you know. And not that he was judgmental, but I really felt like that, yeah. And I'd hate to be, you know, like I always, so I have that little thing going and I mustn't be flippant. But I don't think I am really. I mean, I think it's not seriousness as such. I don't know. It's hard to define the attitude, really. And I, again, I don't really want to have one reason why I'll switch styles, and you know, I'll kind of, though I've ended up, I think, by default, with something recognizable.
Yeah, you're serious.
Like Picabia, I think, you know, like I always go, I'll go and do the opposite, you know, because I wanted to break with it being defined by a particular attitude, you know. Like, yeah,
the moods change, right?
Yeah.
Flippant can be beautiful, right? Flippant can be a great moment, a great point of resistance, right? Someone's being really serious, I've discovered, or someone comes really serious to me about something political, I'll just make some super flippant joke, right? And to me, it's a move to a parry to break that seriousness.
Yeah.
I think there is a great power in the flippant. So I don't want to say it's bad. My point is that play Can also need not be only flippant, right? Play can be quite not serious, but quite concerted, right?
Yeah.
Quite dedicated. I see in your work, right? Like you move between very elaborate things where you're like, I can feel your work in there. I can feel you moving through something. And then sometimes you do these things, right? Where it's just like, whew, this kind And there are these different registers, right? So
I want to break. I don't want it to be like, oh, he's the guy that does that or does that. I want that freedom to be able to go. So, you know, and then that energy is in the other one too. You know, it's sort of, because the thing is into play. And I think a real breakthrough for me was that I went through a whole period of just hanging, you know, doing three pictures next to each other. Yeah. You know, and then I would just take from different periods, different times, and just make sure I always hang them with the distance, you know, set distance, like a Donald Judd, you know, where so they were like a Donald Judd sculptures on a wall, you know. That's how I thought of it. And it didn't really matter. The objects are always partial. It's not that you don't get the whole thing with each painting. You get a part of.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Something that's like the way Greek statues, and you know, they're not painted. They're not as they were, but they're venerated because we could kind of project because there's a gap. You know, they're not complete. They're like a partial. I hate to say partial objects because it sounds very literal, and you know exactly what I'm talking about because of the Deleuze. But I love that thing about bricks. You know that you're building. You know the schizophrenic, and you just add these bricks together to flow and all that. You know, and the idea, and I mean, multiple personalities as well, sort of. And some of the multiple personalities could be really serious. I love that idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Of approaching a painting really, you know, really seriously, like this. Okay, this is going to be a serious one. Sometimes, you know, Trump got it now, and I was just like,
When I was teaching rhetoric, I always threw my students off because I'd say, well, rhetoric is the position of all positions.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Including the position that says, no, there's only one position, right? So it's an impossible set theory, right? Because the set of all things includes the thing that says, it's not everything, I'm only one thing.
Right.
It breaks set theory. It breaks Bertrand Russell, breaks the whole logic for Wittgenstein, all these people, right? Because it's not logical, right? If I'm the set of all positions, meaning in the world of all play, one moment of that is incredibly serious.
Right.
Right. And doesn't want play, but that's part of play.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You see, this is like reading one of your books, right? I'm like the little bulbs go on and they go, that's what I wanted to say. That's it. You include it. What gets me about the seriousness is that it seems to exclude the play, but I don't think the play excludes the seriousness.
Exactly, and that's what throws off people really serious.
I don't mind, you know, the serious. Like, I just want something. I want everything.
Right.
You know, like I want that everything.
Yeah.
Because I think that's ambition.
I think that's why there's an overlap for me between sort of, you know, what I do, like rhetoric or sophistry, which I know has a bad name, but I'm trying to rescue its bad name, and art, right? It's this position of being amidst it all and playing with it, as opposed to trying to command it, as opposed to trying to step outside it, right? There's sort of a joy, and that's, you see that in you know, I think Warhol was so great at that, right? Just his persona of just never, you never pin him. He's just always smirking.
Oh, right? Yeah. No, Warhol, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are artists you come back to, you know, and Warhol's always lurking there somewhere.
He is, right?
Yeah.
But that my whole argument came out of actually trying to write about Marx's work, which I've written about for a lot of years, but he constantly moves media.
Yes.
So he started as a filmmaker, then he did a lot of net art, and he did a lot of algorithmic art, you know, and then he got kind of recognized for that. And that's his work that's in the Whitney now, right? It's sort of a database art. And in fact, there was this whole course taught at Berkeley.
Right. Is he California based?
No. He was California. Not in New York. He's been in New York the last like 20 years.
Okay.
What's her name? The curator at the Whitney. I know her. I don't know why I'm so spaced out. Put his work in the show. She was teaching a class at Cal on database art. It turns out no one was really writing about it. I'd written a bunch of essays about it. So I used to guest talk there a couple of times, and they were all, you know, and so my point being that was like one little world. And then he moved into making these sort of guerrilla films around New York, right? Just these sort of beautiful films on the fly. I got sort of obsessed with that. Then he started working with fabric, right? Yeah, yeah. And he's got obsessed with fabric, these incredible shows of fabric. Now he's working with paper. And yeah, these cutouts of papers of extinct birds that are hanging in these weird ways, and the way paper folds, right, to no longer become the birds. And he's like, what's my thing? He goes, no gallery will really represent me, yeah, because they don't know my argument. They don't, what am I? What am, yeah, I doing? Yeah. Yeah. And he said, so that was how that argument, writing that intro, was like, how do I speak about an artist and say, this is what he's up to?
Yeah.
There is no medium per se. And I was like, yeah, oh, yeah. What he does, and so I finally landed. I was like, you know what? He does have a medium. His medium is imaging itself. Is the very, it's the process. It's all of it.
Well, you raised in Bergson, you know, that was another light bulb moment as well, because yes, the image, you know, and it felt really like unique. Yeah, I don't think I've heard that way of describing image, and it felt like you kind of, it was like in a really helpful way, invention of saying image, just the brain itself is,
yeah,
an image.
No, that's a very opening of matter and memory of Bergson.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you, you know, was that connection, and also the mention of society of the spectacle, and the fact that we're not living in that anymore.
Yeah,
you know, it's very liberating, because that was really much, you know, defined what so-called subversive art, rock music, every, you know, the whole Manchester scene was the Hacienda, you know, it was all geared around derive, you know, taking something, channeling it, you know. But always this very, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I always felt it was very Hegelian thing, that you had this totality.
Yeah.
Again, the serious philosophy, which I guess we have to put our hands up and say that's not really what we're involved with here, is Hegel, you know, and then kind of make basically Heidegger, you know, this monolith, the encyclopedia that contains everything.
Yes.
And you cannot, there's no position outside of it.
Right.
There's no position outside of the seriousness,
right,
which is why you kind of got to have a laugh in a way, you know.
Yeah. Also comes back to the grotesque you were talking about, right? Then you get, yeah, you get the whole thing of scene, you get, you know, the rave, you get punk, you get post-punk, right? That are, yep, introducing the grotesque, that literally just like tearing, breaking.
Yep.
Really, in a very real sense, right? Or the Fall. I know we share a love of the Fall.
Yeah.
Really, you're kind of like, talk about the really weird relationship between play and serious, right? In Marcus Smith, right? Like he never sounds like he's serious, but he's so serious, right? It's like incredible combination, right?
Yeah, you know how many artists, painters, and friends of mine, you know, like the Fall's been the soundtrack.
Oh, that's awesome. Careers, yeah.
It's hilarious, really.
Right.
Yeah, it's anyway. Let's not go talking.
No, but I think it's apropos, because I think there is this moment of what happens. Like I think about Warhol was so great, because he took the society of the spectacle, right? Literally, just took the spectacle. You know, Marilyn Monroe and Mao and whatever, right? And he's just like, I'm gonna play with that. I'm gonna flip it back around, right? So it's not just infiltrating me. It's my play stuff.
Right. Yeah, I'll be in the mirror.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna own it. I'm not gonna let you guys own it. I'm gonna own the production of the spectacle. I'm gonna play what you wanna push down my throat. I'm just gonna use as my fodder, right? Yeah. And I'm gonna literally just, you know, put it through a press, through a silk screen. I'm gonna draw on it. I'm gonna put makeup on it. I'm gonna keep messing with this thing. Right, so it's almost this position of trying to break the society of the spectacle. Then what's so great about him is he goes the next move with the factory and the parties and everything, that he becomes karaoke, it's performance, it's all, he doesn't break the spectacle in order to reaffirm his truth.
He breaks
the spectacle in order to completely flip it and say, no, it's all a put on, it's all performance. I'm part of the spectacle too. It's not a bad thing. I can play here and make all kinds of joy, and he really takes the spectacle, makes it an object he can play with. And I think that's the movement to this, what I call the society of the karaoke, right? Where
you're
always performing. He's performing. He's basically social media.
Ultimately image, like we say, the image, like the cool. You know, I watched a film recently, and it's a short YouTube clip, and he's sitting there being interviewed with his kind of accomplices, Nico and
Jared are sitting there, and they kind of talk for him, and you know, he's quiet, and then he says something. Somebody asks a question, he kind of just blows it off, yeah. And you know, they look very sort of serious and really glamorous in a way that they're pretending to be, like the sort of seedy glamour. Actually, look really glamorous. They look really
absolutely. Cheap. Oh my god,
with Nico! I mean, come on, yeah. Just. And then the Gerard guy with his lovely hair, and you know, they look like they'd walked out of a fashion magazine. They're sitting there. Then the camera pans around, they see the audience, and they kind of hit young people who are just enjoying a laugh in their head. They're just totally getting the joke, you know, totally in that. You know, they're all sharing this subversive moment with this 50s guy interviewing them.
And those are the best.
You know, really great, you know, and I think talking about painting, I mean, you know, Warhol was a great painter. I mean, he's sort of Delacroix Warhol. You know, it's like, yeah. You know, it's 19th century, but there he is with a mop, you know, doing his screen prints.
I think we've shared this. My favorite video clip in the entire world is him at a press conference. He's wearing sunglasses.
Yep.
And someone in the audience, one of the reporters, says, Do you think your pop art is starting to become repetitive? And he kind of chuckles. And goes, yes. Are you going to continue to make it? Yes. That's the whole thing, right? Like, that's the play. Like, they just don't get it. Like, the idea of somebody complaining that pop art is repetitive is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. And him.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Favorite moments in the history of the world, you know.
He's up there, and I think early on you find Foucault writing to Deleuze, you know, thinking about Deleuze and talking about Warhol and giving it this really metaphysical angle, you know, the grin of stupidity, you know,
the
idea of the stupid and the way in which you look at it long enough, lightning will strike, you know.
That's awesome.
Ultimately, will flicker across the tin cans. It's a wonderful, you know, the theatrical, well, in a way, you could kind of tie it all together in a way, because there's a theatricum, this is Latia, don't do Latin, I apologize. The title is Theatricum Philosophicum.
Know
the essay about Klausowski and Deleuze. And it just made me feel like, you know, Shakespeare, we are, all the world is a stage and we are merely players, you know. That's always been my sensibility, I think.
One more move though, right? You got to make that one more move. So all the world's a stage, but the stage itself is part of the play.
Yes.
Right, so that's, again, it's this last move that I think has been the hardest to get to conceptually, right? In the contemporary moments, that last move. So the first, you see these Pirates of the Caribbean movies? There were three, I think there's more, but the first three were directed by Gore Verbinski, who's, I think, one of the great underrated contemporary filmmakers. Okay. He's incredible. Just made one of the greatest movies of all time called Rango, an animated movie. Just talk about the contemporary moment of play. But in the Pirates of the Caribbean, it begins with these pirates, and they're on the ship, and then they're on land, and they're back on the ship, and the ship is on the water.
Right.
In the second one, the pirates are on a ship, but the ship itself becomes a character. It's alive. It has will.
Right.
Third one, the ocean is a character and has will.
Right.
And so over the three of them, you see this move from sort of solid to liquid to gas, right? Everything just moves, you know. So, you know, Deleuze in the cinema books, right? Talks about the gaseous.
Yes.
You get to that last film and the stage itself has gone away.
Right.
So we're not actors on a stage. The stage itself is an actor. There's no ground. We're not standing on anything, right? We're in outer space, floating all around. There's no ground at all. And that's
the image that comes to mind when you mention the film is when they're stuck on that little island, you know.
Yeah. Because there are these moments, right? There are these moments that pop up amidst all the madness, right? And it's what those movies are about. It's like when the whole world is pure play, how do you find identity? How do you find coherence? How do you find form? How do you find art?
Yeah.
And I think like your work is a great example, right? Where you're not standing on firm ground trying to capture the world. The way I read your work, it's why I'm obsessed with your squiggle, right? is that it's this movement. It's all movement. It's not a ground in which you're trying to draw a line.
Yeah.
To me, it's the squiggle because you're in motion with everything else, right? So you're like capturing this bit of Matisse, this bit of Braque, this bit of Picasso, this bit of the field, this bit of Joni, this bit of your own past, this bit of the fall, and you're mixing them all up and it comes out and you have these works. And so I could see your work being called not painting at all, right? Being called mixed media.
Right, okay. Yes. You know?
No, it's not a mess with everybody, you know?
No, I think it's funny, you know, because I edit the painting magazine and, you know, what I found very liberating was this idea of, you know, post-media means means that I can paint, you know, I can do this, I can do that, you know, and it's the freedom, you know, it's that kind of, like, I think people get very threatened because they feel like something, their island that they're sitting on, this little island, whatever it is, is always, you know, defensive. Right. And I think when I talked to you before, we had this thing about this, that arguing against, and then there's arguing with.
Yes. Yeah.
I always feel like when I said I walked away from contemporary art, I think it was more like, oh, that's something maybe I want to argue with. I'm not,
right.
You know, what is this contemporary art stuff? You know, is it the blue chip galleries? You know, is it the ICA in London? And, you know, particular creators got very, very, you know, thought out. Is it Sarah T? That's what contemporary art is, you know. Right. It's a molecular, very Guattari, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really good, you know. It's really interesting, you know, because he wrote on George Kondo.
No,
great essay on George Kondo's work, you know, who was painting these ridiculous figurative cartoon things in the 80s and has gone on to become a blue chip god, you know.
I try to move away from all that because I know contemporary art has a kind of a lot in my world, but kind of bad rap too, right? The kind of, you know, it's too expensive for sort of work that's sort of shitty, that isn't really that engaging. And I'm like, well, okay, that's, I don't want to call that contemporary art. That's just art that's being made now. That doesn't mean it's contemporary, right? So, so I wanted to sort of move and reframe it so that someone like you is contemporary art, right? Because it'd be pretty easy, I think, for someone to look at your work and be like, oh, this is just pretty classic modernist painting, right? I think. I think that's the instinct, right? But what I couldn't do that because I'm looking at it. Oh, I see so much play. I see such a engagement with those forces so explicitly, like Warhol, right? Like I see so much movement in the work that I couldn't.
You need a playground, you know, and the playground is this shifting, is the ship, you know?
Exactly.
But you need to have something to be somewhere, but to in order to leave. I think that's very true. And I think, I just wanted to talk to you briefly about like San Francisco as well, because I mean, I did live in Berkeley for 4 years, El Cerrito for 4 years and had access to the Bay Area. And it's mad, you know, I mean, but it is also free of the blue chip stuff.
The art world perspective, sure.
The art world, there's not really people, and I think I was there in the recession where really bright young artists were staying in the area in Oakland rather than going up. Now we've done my MFA, I need to go to New York or Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
They were kind of kicking around for about 3 years. And so I met some really great people, but there was this sense that they weren't really in, you know, and historically too, that it's like a kind of think tank.
Yeah, it's funny.
What you just said there about contemporary art being, you know, it's not the blue. That's just art that's being made now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that there was people making art or thinking about art as contemporary art. And I think it kind of stuck with me. And I do feel that, you know, you're definitely in San Francisco with this Silicon Valley, you know, and the disruption and all that stuff. You'd like, you're in the future. You're out there, you know, in this...
this weird little bubble.
It's just the 60s, you know, when they're all, you know, you're all dropping the acid and everybody was, you know, experimenting. I think places have, you know, used to have, you know, have their kind of roles, you know.
I think I San Francisco, of course, has gone seemingly through a kind of transition. I'm trying to figure out if it actually has, right? I think so, just because I've been here like 30 years watching the change, right? Watching what happened with Silicon Valley, that in all its claims of disruption, of course, it's just the explosion of the petty bourgeois, right? So every kid supposed to be a rebel. What a hipster today is someone who starts, who opens a business grooming beards. I was like, how did the hip become so petty bourgeois, like opening a business? I really don't understand. You're right, the whole tune in turn out, drop out, right? Timothy Leary is really dead in San Francisco. Yeah. But there was, I never really considered the art world here as kind of this beautiful thing outside of LA and New York. And I know a lot of my students, you know, there was a little bit of concern about that, right? Like, I need to be in one of those places.
Yeah.
At the same time, I love the art that comes out of here, right? I love the art of, you know, again, watching, well, SFAI changed a bunch for a while there before it got overhauled and turned into Identity Politics School. And yeah, the art plummeted. And so it wasn't even art anymore. I couldn't go to those shows anymore.
Right. But
for a while there, the art was so explosive, so playful, such wide variety, right? Including incredible painting. You know, I think one of the superstars of my students there is this great painter who's now in New York called Paul Wackers. Mm-hmm. He paints these incredibly elaborate scenes of plants, and it's just shelves, and there's on the vase, there's almost like a cosmos, right? It's not representational. It's so post-set. It's so contemporary the way you're contemporary, the way it's just... It's even though he's like you, a kind of masterful painter. You could definitely frame him that way, right? Certain people, when their paint touches the canvas, like, wow, that person can paint. And no question about it, there's a craft there, right? It's not that the craft goes away, but that the art itself is not just the craft. It's also the craft, but it's not just the craft. It's this moving between and amongst what it is to be an image, what it is to participate in the world of images.
Yeah. Right?
So I think that's, so I think San Francisco produced these precisely because it hasn't been in New York and LA, precisely because there aren't these blue chip galleries here. It's allowed a kind of freedom.
Yeah, I know.
Playful work here.
Kaprow, you know, the 60s sort of, you know, happening artists kind of had their foot in. And Bruce Nauman is a great favorite of mine, believe it or not, you know, had their storefronts in San Francisco, but then they, you know, they move off to New York. Have to be in New York, you know? I mean, New York is serious. There's a marginality. I guess there's a marginality there because there wasn't an art, market to support it.
Exactly.
Yeah, people could just play, and everybody there, all the artists I met there, you know, were working full-time jobs, you know.
Exactly.
And but really, yeah, it was great, you know, great sort of thinking going on. And exactly. I think that's that aspect. And because I've walked away from, I emigrated, you know, from the UK, you know, that was it. I wasn't coming back. You know, I always leave, you know.
Well, you know, that's also sort of the post nation state, the contemporary moment, right? I mean, we're all moving around, like where's home anymore, right? Everything's mobile, digital nomad. I think COVID just exploded that, right? So,
yeah,
you know, if there's going to be locations anymore.
Yeah. Like
that, you know what I mean? I think that might begin to go away.
Yeah,
it's always been going away more and more, but I think that sort of accelerated, right? So we're all sort of this in these sort of liquid streams of identity and community, right? That's sort of what the internet allows for, right? Which is, I don't have to be here. You and I can communicate, right?
Right.
And form this world, right? It's sort of outside locale.
Well, I really felt that in San Francisco, which, you know, it felt like San Francisco had stopped existing. It had become the city had become the suburb, yeah, and the suburbs had become the city. The ubiquity of the digital realm. I mean, there you are in basically Silicon Valley, as it were.
Yeah.
And where the digital, you know, where Facebook are based, Google are based, the Google campus, you know, and how that that informs your idea of the post-medium as well. I mean,
I think so. Yeah, definitely, no question about it. I mean, that is the condition. I mean, the rise of the, I mean, the phone has been such an incredible thing. It's funny that we still call this a phone, right? Because it's not just a camera, it's a screen, right? And so it becomes almost like you know, like come back to Marshall McLuhan, right? An extension of the human, because that's what I am. That's what my face is, right? My face is both the recorder. I'm taking in the world, right? And I'm playing it back at the same time, right? It's a sort of loop.
Yep.
Right. And of course, the playback can be inflected by all kinds of things, right? You can say something to me, it goes in, and but I'm thinking about, you know, something terrible, and you say something funny, and I don't laugh, right? Because whatever's processing inside me, right? Right. Yep. It's almost like what a film is. The camera, the phone has become this kind of thing, right? It both takes in, it records, but it's so different than the cameras of old because it plays back simultaneously, right? It's a simultaneously screen and recorder, right? So it's like a whole movie machine moving around, constantly taking in the world and playing it back at the same time. So it's like this proliferation of the human as image maker. And as image playback, right? We are constantly, that's what I mean by this sort of society of the karaoke, right? We're performing, we take pictures of ourselves, we post them online, we respond to those images, make more images. Every time we comment on the Facebook, that's an image, it's being recorded, it's a film. It's not just the photograph, it's not just the movie, it's every comment, it's the likes, it's being online at all. That's recording. Cookies are a kind of recording device, right? They're tracking us and recording us. Right? We're kind of making this imprint, right? That's what's so weird about the digital realm. You always leave a footprint.
Yeah.
Kind of material like that. You can't do anything in the digital realm without it being recorded. That's what it is, right? And we even have the Internet Archive, so it's recording everything.
But this proliferation is... I mean, Umberto Eco's Foucault's Pendulum, he writes about, you know, the idea of... all the connections, you know, the constant connection, the proliferation of connection, the proliferation of almost data, and you know, they're almost like the conspiracy theorists that just go down a rabbit hole. You know, there's a darkness to it as well. I mean, there's a kind of sense that it's just limitless. You just get swept away in speculation and but there's a way in which I feel that's only because it's linked to Hegelianism or the spectacle, like we're trying to stand outside it all the time.
As if
the world wasn't always that. Is it, you know, as if primitive man wasn't walking in the woods completely overwhelmed.
Right. No. That's why I love the image of the, let's say the hacker, the hacktivist, you know, the person who's the poacher, the sophist, the artist, the comedian. I think there's all these roles that have become more and more important because they're the ones who can operate in the middle of it, amidst the flow, and still find identity, still find joy, still, right? Rather than just being swept up and codified and turned into a product. Right? I mean, that's sort of the evil side of social media, is it turns you into the product that then it's being sold and exchanged and all this money being made, you receive none of it. That's why the artist, the rhetorician, we're all the comedian, we've become these kind of necessary tricksters, right? Because if in the world in which there is no ground, and there's no outside, and not even wanting to get outside, just saying, okay, if everything's going to be flowing, there's a dark side of it, right? We can kind of be dissipated, kind of controlled and manipulated, kind of always on recorded. The other side of it is you can play with it. You can wear all kinds of masks constantly. You can make a painting that looks like, what was the one we just, you just posted a picture or something. I thought it was you. I thought you would paint
it. Yes, Picard, yeah.
You know? And I was like, and so we can don all these masks and move around. And that's, I think that's what the contemporary artist is this kind of an important role, because they're the ones who can find form amidst the team, amidst the flow.
Yeah,
right?
It may be slow. I mean, I think it may be a slower form, but it's still moving.
Yeah, you know?
That idea, like speed can be catastrophic, you know, because super. So you like, there's that Deleuzean caution, you know, you work slowly and you work with maybe older things. And I don't really think we're going to come to a conclusion here.
No.
There is no conclusion. There's no, no, there's no absolute at the end of the day. But it's been really great to talk to you. Love it. And I'm really looking forward to your enormous encyclopedia of contemporary art. Oh,
there you go. I'll get
everything right inside it. A lot of this stuff goes back to older concerns. I mean, Mallarmé's the book, you know, and he only wrote little fragments. And I think you mentioned, you know, I think modernism is a much more partial and difficult, interesting schizophrenic mess and with the archaic and the arcane and Paul Klee. I find all this stuff, you know, contemporary. I find them contemporary. You know, I find that contemporary.
I completely agree. Yeah. When I taught at SFAI and I was always bringing up like Paul Klee or Matisse, which is again, two of my favorites, they're always making fun of me. They're like, don't you know anything contemporary?
Yes. Well, that's what I get.
Can you bring up a contemporary artist? And I'm like, they are contemporary. I don't know what you mean.
Absolutely. You know, and as I said, as I started this, you know, it's a, you, I think we're kind of very good, very sympathetic with your ideas. And I think we should kind of like, Draw a breath and say goodbye and au revoir.
Okay, au revoir. That was super fun, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Very good fun. Yeah, thank you, Daniel.